where we're going.
Next on my list.
You believe, have you been?
Oh, yeah, I've been in several times.
You ready?
One of the best.
Changed my life.
You're ready.
Have you seen the movie? You should watch it. It's an old movie.
It's a weather vane to see which direction the fish are running.
Yeah.
You should watch it.
We'll call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum to pass the minutes that were here at the previous meeting. So we'll have to carry those over.
Do you have a horse out there?
Noisy crowd. Jeannie, thank you.
Very welcome.
County Public Health, Gary Nelson.
It's going to be very short tonight. I don't really have anything significant to report, except that we are in the process of moving things around, doing some kind of some major changes in our programs in environmental public health. And next month, I'll have some more definitive report outs for you on those types of things that we're in the process of doing right now. So with that, I'll just leave it some anticipation of next month's report. Okay. Thank you, Don.
Quick question.
Sure.
I've been reading, of course, live out in Ridgefield, and they're really excited about their new land that they got from the...
The old treatment facility.
And I noticed that the state ecology people wrote off on it, and then somebody else did, but I didn't see your famous dad in there.
That they were the lead agency. We were have the ability to comment on it, but we don't have to sign off on it.
Are you happy with the job they did?
Very much so.
Ready to go. They can build anything they want to, do anything they want to do there.
That was incredible. You know, not Frontier Heart, the facility, the Chrome place up on St. John's in 78.
The baseball field.
Yeah. That plume, too. Now, that's an EPA-led cleanup. And it's just amazing that, you know, this pump and treat, it actually works. And so, yes, very much happy with the turnout, what happened in Ridgefield. I didn't expect that to happen so fast. But, yeah, it was nasty. Those are volatile compounds, too. So, yeah. So, yeah, thanks, Alan.
Thank you, Gary. Anita.
Okay. Well, a copy of the Green Neighbors newsletter for December is in your packet, and it has all of the events and stuff that are going on, so I hope you have a chance to look at that. We do have a collection event scheduled for January the 7th at Fisher's Landing from 9 to 1. And this, we usually do this after the holidays, so we can collect styrofoam and HHW and electronics, and with the idea that, you know, a lot of people will get presents, electronics, so they need to turn in old electronics, and they have a lot of styrofoam from the packaging. So we'll be doing that again, and that's on the 7th. This is kind of a little fun thing we're doing. We're at Whole Foods with a waste reduction exhibit, and what we did was we filled some garbage bags. They're filled with shredded paper, but they're, you know, filled up, and they're stacked up like a Christmas tree. And the amount of the garbage represents the amount of waste that people generate over the holidays. And so there's some education along with it, just reminding people how much extra waste that's created over the holidays and how to plan and reduce your waste. So that's kind of a good one.
Is that a family or per person?
It's per person.
Okay, sounds interesting.
Yeah. So, and then also I wanted to give you an update. When we talked about the coordinated prevention grant from Ecology, we had one of the things we had talked about was expanding neighborhood collection events. And too bad Lisa's not here because she was interested in this, but in particular with yard debris. So we've been working with Department of Ecology on developing the scope of, you know, the entire grant, actually, but in particular for these events, and we're calling them Recycling Day events, And we're going to kind of consolidate them with our household hazardous waste events. And we'll have them working with the various cities and then a couple in the county. But we've expanded the types of materials that will be collected. So it will include HHW, block foam, the e-waste, batteries, tires, dimensional lumber, AC units, and woody yard debris. And we're also, Clark Public Utilities will be at the site, and they will be accepting freezers and refrigerators, and we'll also have shredding. So we're still working on planning how that will be, how they will be, and when they will be, and where, and getting the logistics worked out. But we're kind of excited about it, so it should be fun. And then just an update on the county. The county went through its ISO 14001 audit this past week, and things seem to go well. So just as an update, the county is remaining certified with its ISO certification. And then we're working on our year-end numbers already. We'll hope to have a new recycling and a diversion rate calculated very soon, and we're updating our data reports, so we'll be sharing that information with SWAC. That's it for me.
That's it. Mike? I got a couple of questions. I asked you and never getting a reply. Is somebody from staff going to go to that environmental thing in Portland?
We talked about it. We actually have a lot of our green businesses that mm-hmm. are going, and we provided a discount for their membership. And we were talking about who might go on staff, and I think we decided, Rich, that you were going to go and represent us, too.
Actually, it will be Tanya.
Okay.
Johnny Luthold from the city will be going.
Okay.
And Legacy's application for being a green hospital is almost done. They have to play in the tub with the garbage.
Yes.
That's the only thing that's left. And that doesn't sound like fun to anybody in that hospital because, you know, they have bio blood, they have all this other stuff, and they're just sitting there wondering, ooh, this is not the fun part of it.
That's formally called a waste audit.
Yes. But, you know, they're playing the plastic thing, whatever. And the other thing is, the other day, I'm sure all of us have been beset by these ads from mattress companies all over. I mean, every 5 minutes they come on Channel 8, and there are signs up all over, and there's people waving the thing like pizza people to get you to go buy these mattresses. And they say they recycle the old ones. What do they do with the old ones? Do they just end up in the landfill?
Well,
does anybody know?
They can be taken apart in the metal. Part can be, you know, recycled because it's metal. I don't know if it's actually happening here anywhere. Do you guys know?
St. Vincent's Paul was doing it at one point, but, you know, it's kind of a laborious process, and then the advent of the bed bugs kind of came on, and I think that started to really kind of put the hurt to it. So a lot of it, I think, is still just getting landfilled. But well, I can't say that for sure because
there used to be a mattress making company just as you went up the hill into town, you know, from Burntbridge Creek up the hill. But I don't see it there anymore. So I'm just wondering what they do with those things. But they say they'll take your old one and recycle it. And I thought, next time I'll stop by and ask them where it goes. Thank you.
Anything else?
I just want to alert you that Association of Washington Cities, you may already know this, has ongoing work that they work on all the time. We have a couple conferences a year. I've been on the state and federal legislative committee. And some of the result of some of the work that we've done there is that there is a solid waste management grant, and I believe it's a federal grant. Yes, it's a USDA rural development, $3.4 million in grants available to cities and towns looking to reduce or eliminate pollution of water resources and improve planning and management of solid waste sites in rural areas. So I don't know what the definition of rural is, but we do have a lot of Clark County that's rural, and if we need some assistance with grant money to explore or whatever, it might be something interesting if, you know, we're, even if it's Waste Connections as part of siting another facility that they might want to do or need to do, and where it might be located. So the definition of rural would be key, but if there is federal grant money allocated and it's something we need to do, and that it would cost us resources to do it, it might be worth looking into.
Okay, great. Yeah, we can look into that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike, do anybody have any questions on the Leichner Landfill Master Plan contract? We provided that to you last time. We are moving forward with the public participation portion of that, and we'll have a plan out sometime after the first of the year of what we're actually going to do and how we're going to approach the public participation piece of that. I'm in the final stages of applying for the integrated planning grant for to evaluate the Fleischer property, which is right next door. That was also part of that RFP, which is that property is contaminated. It's directly adjacent to the Costa properties in between Waste Connections. And so we're applying for a grant to do additional environmental studies on it, determine what the cleanup costs would be, and potentially take a look at master planning that along with the cost. So that's about a $200,000 grant, and it's probably going to go in next week, but it'll just go into a holding pattern once it hits the college. And I doubt we'll hear anything until February. And so as soon as we hear back, we'll let you know if we're moving forward with that piece. Right now, the initial kickoff of master planning for Leichner, the public piece, isn't probably going to happen until late February or early March. We just kind of figured that people will be holed up in their homes until then, and we want to get a little better time to get them out of their houses and get them over to talk to us. So we're thinking March will be a little better, and by then we'll have a solid plan in place. And we'll kind of present the basics of that plan to you once I have a better feel for exactly how it's going to go.
And my understanding in that package is 99th Street, too.
Or 99th
is kind of the same.
It's 99th basically is the right of way, which was purchased by with Public Works dollars just for that purpose. So there is the residential piece to the north of that that was donated by the Leichners, but if the road goes around the pond, that piece could be eaten up by the road, or if the pond gets moved to the north, a large portion of that 8-acre parcel could get eaten up. So we really don't know what the disposition of the residential parcel to the north is. You know, the 99th right-of-way is just that. It's dedicated to that right-of-way. So what we're really looking at is, you know, that long-term disposition of the landfill 8 to 10 years from now, and in the immediate future, what are the industrial uses for, you know, the clean piece of property, which is the Kosky. And you're going to be hearing the entire site, the Leichner campus, is kind of what we're starting to call it. And so, you know, when you hear that shift from landfill to campus, efficient business part here.
The master planning's already working.
Yes. So, we'll go through a little bit more on that, and maybe on the next meeting, once we, you know, get this grant in, we'll bring that in and kind of share that with you too. Because it's not quite ready to share yet. I've still got another week's worth of work on it. That's it for me.
Any other questions for Mike?
What's the public input going to be?
Well, we're going to have at least two open houses. One is to get some initial feedback on, you know, what people think will fit well in the neighborhood. And it's one of the things we kind of debated back and forth is, you know, is this going to be like a real open process, or is it going to be more of a, you know, here's what we've got, here are the constraints, and it's sort of an informed process, and they, based on those constraints, you know, comment on kind of what can be there. But, you know, we're past the point where we're, you know, studying incinerators, and we've already done a fatal flaw analysis that we provided to you earlier. So as you know, there's land use constraints that we're working with. There's environmental constraints that we have to be able to monitor the site. Certain types of activities can't be allowed there. So
are you going to do a mailing to people?
We're going to do mailings too, yeah.
Specifically to the people, like within a couple miles or something?
Yeah, it'll be probably closer than that, but that was one of the things we're still laying down the boundaries on.
Yeah.
And then it'll be wider than the typical SEPA boundary, but we're not going way out, because once you get a certain distance, people don't even care. And in fact, in January, we're going to go talk to the people, the Homeowners Association to the north, which is called the North Point Homeowners Association, and just kind of spell it out to them that what they see out their back window now is what they're going to see for quite a while until 99th goes through, which is 68 years out. And then at the same time, one of the project manager from Public Works that's overseeing the widening of 94th, he's going to go with us so he can kind of explain how 94th is going to be widened and signalized down there. So I think in some ways, there'll be more, once they hear nothing's going to happen out at their backyard, they'll be more interested in what's happening at 94th on that end. And I think the same will be true when the folks along that eastern edge here that, well, we're not doing anything with this landfill for 10 years because it's still cooking. And they'll probably say, fine, it's going to be the folks down there towards the south end near the Koski where this is most likely to happen. They're going to be the most vocal and involved. And so we do plan to hit the entire area around there, but we expect most of the comments and interest to come from the south end.
Yeah, just, you know, in my opinion, you know, an extra outreach to the people in that area.
Yeah,
rather than just have a public hearing and hope that somebody shows up.
So the initial mailing will be a kind of a one-page folder inviting them to the open house. It'll have the web page updated, a listserv where they can sign up. And so we're really trying to shift away from that, the old style of, you know, it's all mail, it's all, you know, stuff that they're throwing away, to here's the electronic contacts, and then have everything more web-based so they can just get as much as they can from our frequently asked questions that we'll have posted. And if they want to come, they can. If not, they can shoot us comments over the internet. I think, you know, there's been a shift. I mean, we see it with newspapers. Everybody's reading it on the internet now. And I think that's kind of happening with the public forums. People are watching CTV and zooming their comments on, you know, some blog somewhere. And that's kind of how we're going to do both, to have the human outreach and do the more standard stuff, but I expect most of our comments and interest will be over the internet.
Yeah. Okay,
that's a good question.
I think people are used to that methodology. I know I just had to go through with it with the making my comments about the coal and the oil.
Right.
You know, same routine.
I'm still struggling getting used to it, but that's okay.
Me too.
Anything else? Okay, that puts you up, Rich.
Okay, real short, good news and bad news. Bad news is for 20 shopping days till Christmas. The good news is 15 more days to use your yard debris coupon.
Which is really more fun.
It's cold to break
how
clean.
How many days to winter solstice? So the days start getting longer.
18.
We're really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the day after your coupon runs out.
16,
Do my math.
Does anybody have anything from ecology? Was there any letters or comments?
I just had an email from her and said she wasn't going to be here.
Okay. Hey, Anita, you're up.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about Appendix M again. And
what are you talking about? I've got it. I could find my glasses. Okay.
Somebody else want to copy?
Yep.
All right, so last time we looked at it and there was some discussion about adding information about public input, which is kind of what we were talking about with the master plan. I got a master plan. So anyway, we went back and we made some changes to it. So maybe it would be good for me to kind of walk through the changes that we have. And for the most part, the red lines that you see on 1, 2, and 3 are pretty much the language that we'd seen before.
Are we on Appendix M?
Yes.
Thank you.
So at the bottom of 3, though, is where some of the new language starts, and that is talking more about the public participation process. And then we have a lot of resource documents. EPA actually has a lot of documents that deal with siting of solid waste handling facilities and outreach and, you know, how to go about it. And so on page 4, what we did was we basically just inserted, instead of incorporating all of or some parts of that into this, we make a reference to those resources that are available and where you can find those on the internet. So the ones that are listed here are waste transfer stations, involved citizens make a difference, sites for our solid waste, a guidebook for effective public involvement, waste transfer stations, a manual for decision making, and then the last one is criteria for solid waste disposal facilities and a guide for owner and operators, which also include siting. In that particular document.
Could you put a line space between the two other books?
Yeah.
It just
actually
highlights them better.
As I was looking at this, I realized it's not formatted.
It's just my
too great.
No, you go and use these references quite often. Of course, we would. But do you find that they're updated, kept current? And because lots of times I go to some place and that's gone. You know, they took that one out, you know, or something. These are ones that they would update, so that, let's say for our next 5 years.
I hope so.
That's all.
And I do realize that when you reference something in a document like this in particular, that's a chance. But I would say that I'm fairly certain that EPA will keep them on the site unless they're updated, and then hopefully it would have either another link or you could search for the document. So that was kind of the first change. The second one on page M5 is the table, and we're recommending taking out the table. Just take it out completely. I think it was confusing. And so that's the recommendation. And then on page 6 and 7, the steps are old language, but what we tried to do before was put in some of the criteria into the steps, and I felt like that was becoming too confusing too, so we've taken the criteria out and it's moved to the back, and it's kind of been it's located together. So the steps that we go through are pretty much the same. And then if you go to page 9, it starts talking, well, actually on page 8, at the bottom of page 8, it starts talking about the public information and involvement programs. So this would be the process for conducting a public information campaign associated with siting a solid waste handling facility. And then the steps are laid out. Identify who and why. Step 2 is determine the information needed. Step 3 is identify the interest groups and organizations with whom information must be exchanged. Step 4 is describe any special circumstances that could affect selection of public involvement techniques. 5 is identify appropriate techniques and their sequence to accomplish information exchange. And these are from the EPA resource guides.
A question.
So they pretty much follow the EPA service guides.
Absolutely.
Hey, Anita.
Yeah.
There's a net in the first paragraph. Seventh line down, no shy, a facility is needed.
Okay. We don't want any shy facilities.
That's correct.
And a comment on that first paragraph in the revision. I think that's key when it talks about why a facility is needed, what the feasibility is. That is the first step to getting, I mean, internally in solid waste handling, the contractor, internally it'll be known. It'll be obvious that there needs to be an additional facility or relatively so. But for the public to understand why another facility is needed. And the other thing that'll happen with that, it'll draw attention to, if you need it, the questions will come up about, aren't there more recycling resources we can add at existing facilities?
Right.
It opens up that whole conversation again to the public about the need to recycle more material and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
In step number 4, describe any special circumstances that could affect selection of public involvement techniques. I'm not sure what that means.
Well,
if it was some kind of hazardous material,
that could be the type of facility could have an impact. Like neighboring, you know, like what the neighborhood's like, just the characteristics of the neighborhood.
So it could be any special circumstance.
It could be any special circumstance.
The work
could
that
be
makes
hauler, could be haulers that are bringing in things that are not nice. I don't want those in my backyard, but regular garbage might be okay, you know.
But public involvement, the word techniques, doesn't seem to fit there.
Oh, okay.
I think that's why I'm kind of a little puzzled by it.
Yeah, I think if you just eliminated the word, it makes more sense.
Supposing, I've got a question for you, Anita.
Yeah.
Supposing an individual wants to set up a facility to store hazardous waste in Ridgefield, for instance, to take advantage of that property that's available?
Right.
Now, does that person have to go through this process before he goes through the Department of Ecology process?
That's an excellent question. And if it's a permitted facility, the answer is definitely yes. And if it's a non-permitted facility, then I think it would need to be in compliance or compatible with the solid waste management plan, and it would be best if it did, but they would not necessarily have to.
I don't want to be a naysayer, but I've got to say this, having gone through this process myself some 20-some years ago.
Right.
Today, it would be literally impossible for me to put the facility in, I did in the Campbell Special Industrial Park. For an individual to finance, and I don't think we're going to solve that here, but I just want to call attention to some things. It seems to me that there's a lot of duplication here in the very procedures that are called for in the WAC regulations for hazardous waste. The siting situation is specifically called out there, among other things.
Right.
But I'm not, you know, I can see where the county probably is feeling that they have to do this. I'm telling you, for a businessman, it's going to be very anti-business oriented. I mean, it's going to be impossible for a person. Now, where is that going to go? The reason I'm saying this is that we're seeing a shrinkage of these facilities all the time. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. As they reduce the numbers of people in the business, the competition goes away. And so all of a sudden it becomes whatever the traffic will bear. So there is no competition. So there's only one source of way to get rid of your material.
Trash.
And what happens to the businesses that have to pay that price? It bounces back on us. And when we go to buy a product, all those costs are passed on. I don't have an answer to this. I just want to call attention to these things because having been there and seen what happens in this stuff, this is real. And my concern is that we have to be responsible to the environment. I don't think anybody wants to risk a fish kill, for instance. I don't think anybody in his right mind would invest his life fortune in putting a facility in that's going to cause a water table to be polluted. That'd be insane. So, I mean, with all good intentions, what's going to happen is we're going to reduce the number of opportunities for entrepreneurs, if you want to call them that, or businesses, to go into a business to provide a competitive price.
You wanted to speak?
Yeah, well, you opened up the can of worms, I guess.
I'm sorry.
But I don't think there can be, you know, too much. The idea here is to make sure that people know what they're living next to and what the potential is for contamination. I mean, we just talked tonight about, I mean, how many cleanup sites do we have in Clark County? And this is part
this
of
is the
we side. Want to prevent it. And it, maybe it's a disincentive to use chemicals. Good. Public health needs to be, I mean, I don't want to get on too much of a rant here, but I don't think you can have too much overlap when it comes to citing these types of facilities.
Won't there be a lead agency or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah. And I was going to respond to your comment about the wax because with HHW facilities, the state has basically delegated their responsibility to the public health.
Okay.
So it would just be the one process. And, I mean, obviously you would be applying and adhering to the wax, but it would be through this process that we're talking about.
And be administered through public health?
Permitted.
The permit would be?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting into a large facility, then you're probably dealing with ecology and potentially the feds, too.
Is there any inner boundary breakup? How close are you guys cooperating with Collis County? Why couldn't we haul to there? You know, if it's closer, instead of we can't put one in Ridgefield, it's not that much further to haul a little bit further into Collis County and dump this stuff.
That's what Mike always advocates, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, it's Skamania County.
Well, Skamania County, a lot of the residents do come over, and we do not have provisions, say, like Collis County has, where you have to show your ID. We just take their waste and bill them for it. If it's HHW, sometimes they might, you know, if it's an Oregon license plate, they might reject them. But we want to get the material out of the system, so most of the time it's going to be taken. Collis County, on the other hand, they actually ID at the gate. You've got to be a Collis County resident.
No, but I'm saying, is there any mesh where Waste Connections could haul to Collis County instead of trying to build another disposal site in our county?
It's Commerce, so
they would have to work. Actually, Callis just bought the old warehouse or landfill, and they're redeveloping it into their new landfill. And I haven't talked to Dawn in a while to figure out where that's at, but if they're going to have out-of-county restrictions like they've had on the other landfill. if it were a disaster, that's something that we've really, we have talked about with Cowlitz County, that, you know, if we can't go south, we may need to go north. And we have not put that interlocal together, and that's something, if they get the new landfill rolling, that we definitely want to do.
But it's not an if on that landfill. They're already hauling stuff in there.
Oh, they are now?
Yeah.
Okay, I have, like I said, I have not talked to Don in months.
The first test loads to make sure that all the routing, everything from Willis's transfer station going up there, they're trucking a large part of it. There's some bugs to be worked out of that, but all the equipment is on site getting ready to make that. The trains will still run from the mills up the back road, but the municipal solid waste is, I'm not sure when it officially starts. I would guess probably right after the first of the year.
So do they have tippers up there, or are they just lifelorn it?
They're tippers. They're the tippers that Weyerhaeuser was using.
Okay.
That's my understanding. I haven't been up there. I expect that I will be invited for driver training.
I'd like to go up there and see it myself. It's been many, many, many moons since I was up there, like in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not long after it was put in. Back when I was in Lewis County, went up there one time, and that's it.
If you ever want to see a landfill that's in a pristine, mountainous area, that's well-maintained, it's phenomenal. You're up in the middle of nowhere, and then you go another 10 miles. And, I mean, you don't have anybody around you. It's one of the most meticulously maintained landfills I've ever seen.
And I can't imagine that.
Or it is. Meticulously maintained
landfill. I've been there. I've been there, but it was 14 years ago or so. When the trestle burnt, we hauled in there.
Oh, okay. You were hauling up that lovely road.
Yeah, the train was going.
So that's pristine. Do they have a little picnic area?
Yeah, in the kitchen they do.
Is that a more cool with the large mountain up there?
No,
it's a different area.
Take Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And go directly east till the pavement ends and go about another 8 miles.
Yeah.
Oh, how far out of town?
It's at the top of the hill of Headquarters Road.
Because we used to fish in that one lake that's...
Spirit Lake?
No. Silver Lake.
Yeah.
I got up there. We had little motor scooters. And we
it's
went all
on the other side of that.
Yeah.
To where's the south. Rife Lake? Close to Rife Lake?
Mm-hmm.
Close to Rife Lake?
No.
No, that's
farther north. Go basically to about mile marker 45 and hang a right and go up in the hills.
Headquarters Road.
Like you're heading for Mount St. Helens.
Okay.
Yeah, but not
to Toodle Valley.
Not to Castle Rock. Yeah. A little short.
So there's not a lot of inter-county cooperation on this then?
Well, not really on if we're going to cite it. We've got two distant landfills that are 300 years of life. And at this point, we're contracted into that for quite a while. I was surprised that they were able to pull it off, that they were able to buy that, because that was their plan, too, was to long haul to Urbanco. And then they took the money out of the bank and gave it to Weyerhaeuser.
And generally, when we're talking about facilities in the county here, mostly what we're talking about are transfer facilities,
yeah.
Just because we do have the...
Where do our drug take back? Is that stuff taken up to Longview and burned up there, too?
Goes to Morton, doesn't it? To Stericycle?
Yeah, it goes to Stericycle.
It goes to Stericycle.
Okay. So they're the only ones that do it.
Well, the illegal stuff is burned at Longview Fibers. Or one of the mills up there. DEQ takes stuff in there and burns it at night.
Oh, the marijuana and stuff.
Yeah, marijuana and stuff.
I wonder what happened to them people up there.
Okay. I'm sorry for the interruption.
No, it's okay. So anyway, the the one section that has been added deals a lot with public information and just the strategies that you would try and the areas that you would try to identify in preparing how you would present in any of the public information and the information about the new facility. So it's more of trying to get the public involved in the process.
Page M10.
Uh-huh.
It starts out elements that should be used in the public involvement process,
uh-huh.
Early notification. The next item, appoint a project contact person. You might have understood this as you revised it last month, but it's not clear to me that person would be from what source? Would that be county staff? Would that be a private contractor? Would that be the hauler? Or
I think it could vary depending upon what type of facility is. I mean, obviously, if it was going to be one of the county's critical solid waste handling facilities, it probably would be a county person. If it were going to be, just a private facility, then I think they would have their own point person.
So it would depend on the circumstances of what was being advocated for.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Also, if I could ask a broader question.
Sure.
I did not see outlined the criteria for qualifications for who can operate. So, I mean, we have siting an area, and we have that whole process. Then there's determining who would be the contractor. So the contractor could, under state law, although we don't do it in Clark County, the contractor could be the county. Or it could be Waste Connections or another waste company. So the credentials, the qualifications, and the historical track record, I don't know that that would need to be part of the public process, but I think it would be important to look in the review process. So where that would fit in, I'm not sure, and it's much less about siting guidelines for the facility than it is operation of the facility.
Exactly, and that it goes to the that would go more to the operating permit.
Yeah,
And I'm trying to think in the plan where we talk about the operating permit process. I mean, we have it's more delineated in the county code, actually.
Do we currently, if someone comes to us, even Waste Connections, and says we want another solid waste handling facility, we need it, we would look at their track record. We would look at how well they followed their contracts, how well they followed their restrictions and conditions, and, you know, if they had bad spills and that sort of thing. So is it sort of innately built into our system?
I think it is innately built into the permitting process.
The qualifications. I mean,
yeah. Okay, so that's the place that would be then.
Yep.
Yeah, and if it was, we'll say, under contract like we're operating now, you always conduct due diligence of both on the operator itself, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's specifically when we do an RFP, we ask for, you know, these judgments, settlements, you know, fines, that kind of stuff as part of any of the contracts.
Yeah.
And then they have to go through an extensive financial assurance process.
That's what I was going to say. The financial assurance is what is the reason why that's there, in case there is some unscrupulous person. Or
but it is an interesting question in terms of the solid waste management plan, and right now I can't think of where the operating permit process is addressed. Unless
I think when we had Portside came in, because we spent quite a bit of time on Portside.
Yeah.
I mean, they had proposals about who was going to operate and that sort of thing.
We talked about that a lot, and who was going to operate and what their
right.
experience was and
right.
what their track record right. and ability what to be successful doing it would be. So I know you'll think about that, and if it's absent in a critical part of the plan, I'm sure that we'll be adding it. Yes.
Well, it's a critical part of contracting. The guy has to be responsive and responsible. And
correct.
You probably need that in the five-year plan.
Yeah. You also have to make sure that he makes a profit so that, you know, he's not going to...
Well, in fact, we ran into that with the single-family recycling contract where we had a well-known, very large vendor submit a proposal that was incomplete specifically to the financial assurance questions that we asked, and they got hammered on that. And also, as far as operations, they were proposed a very limited call center. And that spoke to the ability to perform at the level we wanted them to perform. And so that is often where we do it. But if we've got an existing contractor, you know, we actually have, with the Columbia Resource contract, we do have operation standards within that contract also.
Yeah, true. And I know that we've always exercised that. And it's a smart thing to do, but whether it needs to be in part of the plan update,
right.
Emphasizing that
right.
is another question.
Okay. Then on page M11 is where we've regrouped the siting criteria. And again, this is the criteria that was used in the EPA documents. And basically, they have them grouped by exclusionary criteria, which is the first group, technical criteria, and then community specific criteria. And this actually, the last one sort of goes to some of the, maybe the things with the public embalming plan. And these aren't necessarily prescriptive in terms of specific criteria. It's more guidance rather than prescriptive. And also, it's not necessarily... you don't necessarily start with one and go to the other. They can kind of be free-flowing, and it's kind of an ongoing process in terms of how you evaluate. But generally, I would say for exclusionary criteria, you probably would want to go through that first, just because if there's anything that's going to mix it, you want to know that up front. And then the technical criteria is geared more towards the site and how well a facility fits into the site, and does it meet specific criteria for that. And then the community specific criteria, which moves over onto page 12, and again, it's just, you know, like things to consider. But proximity to schools, churches, recreation sites, and residences. If you had a site that fit that, you probably would want to gear your public information involvement differently than if it were in the industrial park, for example. So, comments about all of that?
And it's not a cookie-cutter solution, because each site could have different callers from different industries and different places, and same with the community around it.
And you can have all different kinds of facilities, too. That
but the exclusionary thing is pretty common to all.
Yeah. Well, we're not reinventing the wheel. We're taking the guidelines of the EPA.
Yep.
And except for some of the grammar,
we dotted the I's across the T's.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. You know, there's a question of where is the operation section. I would like to know just
for education.
I have to think that Rich is right. It has to be in the solid waste plan somewhere because we talked about it so much.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We know that it's there. We know that we're not going to let Fishlocks come in.
Just make sure. Just that's why I put a little star by it, to make sure that it's in there.
Any other comments on the appendix, though?
I move we accept it as altered or repaired or whatever we want to use that term.
Yeah, and we'll get an opportunity to look at the reformatted all of the chapters. So the fun will continue.
Implementation schedule.
Okay, implementation schedule. Mike, you need a copy of that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, this actually is one of the last chapters. We are working on the new chapter that we're preparing for the economics of the solid waste management system, but this chapter rolls up all of the recommendations from the chapters, and I, in particular, like this chapter because you can just kind of flip through it and get a good sense of all of the work that we've done to date, what we're recommending to be deleted, and language that has been added, and get a good sense of everything that's being recommended in the entire solid waste management plan.
What is the cross-tab red represent?
Deleted.
Deleted what? You can delete WUTC?
We are deleting the recommendation that the county...
You're going to delete them.
Oh.
That would have worked really well.
Actually, I think that was sort of the recommendation, and we found out we couldn't.
Well,
so we're going to delete the recommendation.
You know, I think we need to network with our state representatives.
And actually, those two basically got rolled into the number four there. Work with state government on local issues related to solid waste prevention. So we kind of consolidated those two.
And hasn't the recommendation from SWAC over the years been more to have more reasonable rules and standards by WUTC than it has been to say we want them eliminated?
Right.
And to have that whole system be more workable and practical where it integrates with local county solid waste.
Exactly.
Is that what we're looking for?
Yes.
No, I think you want an outright ban.
Well, I've always, you know, and I hate to say this, but I've always thought that, you know, counties of a certain size should be able to contract, but that just,
yeah.
So the WARA just beats that back so hard you can't believe it. So
the money involved to support the regulated U2C, yeah. We don't have enough and never will see enough.
That's correct.
To override the right or the wrong of U2C. Is an issue.
And actually, that I think is more of striking the recommendation.
In my opinion, there's a few issues. The city of Vancouver has a state given right to franchise their garbage collection. Outside the incorporated areas, the county does not. The county has to deal with, in this case, the G certificate carrier, which is Waste Connections,
right.
Which is fine. But they have a special citizen status by having this G certificate that will never go out to bid. No other carrier, except somebody that buys it from Waste Connection, will ever get it. The county does not have the opportunity to franchise out their system like the city does. So that's the end of that. And that's why
UTC... And that's the rule at WUTC that you'd like to see relief from.
I don't think that, I don't believe in
sole source.
Privileged citizens. G certificate carriers are privileged citizens. They carry on their balance sheet a value for their G certificate because somebody's grandfather back in 1920 got a G certificate.
Yep.
But I think from the county's perspective and the county's plan, it's like there's some things that we can control.
And I agree.
There's some things that we can influence, and then there's some things that we have no control over.
Right.
And
well,
that's one.
Yeah. and I agree. And kind of back to one point that I brought up a few meetings ago was that, you know, Waste Connections gives UTC 1%.
Right.
And I think that the citizens of the county need to know about that. I personally, when you take your garbage to the transfer station and you get your garbage bill in the mail, you take your Waste Connection bill and you take your Comcast bill and you set them side by side, Comcast breaks up all the regulatory fees. Waste Connection, there's nothing. You just pay the bill, $52 a month or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There's no breakdown of the fees.
Well, does the county want the breakdown of the fees?
Well, I know that's something.
I don't know that on the garbage itself that we actually have a fee on the garbage.
You on the transfer station.
We have the ability to do that. That's the one.
But he's talking about the UTC.
Yeah, I know. Like, just the UTC fees. 3.6 is on there, usually.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, we're talking about UTC, but I know there's county fees and other fees involved. But as a taxpayer, you know, I think they need to know. But, you know, this is probably a discussion for a different time. But that's.
But some of those fees are fake, and they're not really going to a public entity. They're going to the company itself.
Well, that's between the county or the agency.
No, I'm saying when I get a bill, like my phone bill, there's lots of line items. Some of them look like they're going to a state or a federal or something, like access charges or. And it really is just an add-on for the phone company. If you start looking at some of them,
fees that they
but they write it not like our administrative fee. It's like, you know, we have to pay this, which is phony.
Well, if you live outside a city, boundaries of a city, and you have a cell phone, you still pay a city cell phone tax depending on your zip code. And I've tried to argue that out. They say, you have to put something in that block, and that little bitty money goes to Ridgefield or wherever. All I just, all right.
No, I won one. And they went back 2 years and backed it out and gave me my back money.
$4.
No, it ended up quite a bit.
I want to see your consulting firm listed on the internet.
Okay, back to chapter 18.
Back to chapter 18, so...
Looks like it simplified it a lot.
And that was actually one of our goals, is to simplify, and that's another reason why you'll see some strike through.
There are several places you got to check your numbers out.
Oh, and yeah, don't worry about the numbers.
Yeah,
because once the strike throughs and the red lines go away, then we'll fix the numbering.
Also, throughout the chart, I see things that are listed that don't have an implementation time frame. It doesn't say it's ongoing or...
Yeah,
you know, so that's a good point. We need to,
I think to list them is important, even if we can't pinpoint the criteria, but something important, it should be in here. But I didn't know exactly what
about that half of them are ongoing, too.
Yeah. Actually, you're right, because on 3, there's the new ones. They don't have that. That's an oversight. We need to add that.
And there's one in here that says It'd be on page 8, or, yeah, chapter 18, page 16. And it's item number 3, and, well, is it 1? I see what 1 is. 2 appears to have disappeared. You might want to look at the numbering here.
Yeah,
at any rate,
the
number 3 at the bottom.
Yes.
Collect food scraps from residents.
Yes.
So that doesn't have a time frame, but is that going to be a policy that we're going to ask our contractor to do, or is it see if a program can effectively be developed, or?
It's see if a program can effectively be developed. And actually, in the coordinated prevention grant, that was one of the tasks that we put in, is basically do a feasibility study for food waste, residential food waste.
Would it be better to put feasibility study on that item? Since that's really probably what's going to come first.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Isn't Waste Connections in some place doing a mini test too?
They're, well, we're doing the school collection program right now, and some businesses, Waste Connections has, or at the transfer station, they have the capacity to do reload, and they are going to be doing a pilot, and Mike, you might want to talk about it.
Yeah, so we signed off on a pilot last week, and basically what it is they're going to bring in loads of food waste, mix it with some yard debris in a sealed container, and then reload that and head it out to the dirt huggers out in the Dalles. And we're going to get some logistical and financial data off of a pilot program to determine can we get away from the metro system and the dirt huggers, and can that pencil out.
Where are you going to ship it?
The Dalles. Actually, the Dalles port is after the first of the year. So the issue is that Metro's capacity overall with the Portland program is very strained. They are taking the food waste down to a digester that cannot handle any foreign objects, basically. Does not handle paper products well, and it's designed for, I would say, like a food processing facility, which has this nice, clean, homogeneous material coming out the back end, a potato plant, the Lamb Weston, something like that, that's just clean. And let's face it, that's not us. I mean, you know, there's going to be silverware in there, there's going to be a rock in there, there's, you know,
a plastic fork,
and you name it. And at least with the traditional composting facility, they can do fibers. They can do some more screening. And so we want to see if this will work, but we just, you know, how much is this going to cost? And once you mix the food waste with the yard debris, you've got a completely different product. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want to make sure it's cost effective to do this. And, you know, I've not been a real fan of the food waste because the system is not fully matured. We're at that spot where we were in 1989-90, where the systems are just kind of getting rolling. They really haven't ferreted it out. You know, they didn't have the mega lines like we do today. And that's kind of where we're at right now with the food waste. You know, it sounds good on paper, but if it's in your backyard, it doesn't smell too good. And so they've had a real tough time siting this material, and a lot of the stuff, the food waste is being shipped clear to a freight area, or not a freight, it's George Washington.
Same difference.
I mean, it's the haul.
Last meeting, though, Mike, Scott said that Waste Connections had a plant up in Chehalis.
It's outside of Chehalis, yeah. That one's plugged. It was plugged the day they opened it. It was at capacity. And that's the problem. And in Thurston County, what they did is they said, free yard debris, bring it on. And they brought it. And so that facility, you know, and it doesn't,
They don't have that much food waste up there either, as far as I know, but it was just organics. And that place was plugged from day one. And that's kind of what's happened when Metro kicked off its commercial and residential food waste. Or I should say Portland did, because Portland's the major contributor. And they just weren't prepared. And so we need to kind of take baby steps with this. And the feasibility study could be a couple years out as things settle down. So they will.
What kind of volumes are they taking to the Dalles or Dallesport?
You know, we're doing one live floor at a time.
And like one a day or one a week or
one
a month?
To two a week.
Two a week?
Yeah. Up to two if we can time the yard debris and time the food waste. It's a 90-day pilot.
Okay, so where's the yard debris mixed at?
On the floor in West right Bend, right down, right by the belt.
Okay, so it's taken right off the
truck.
At West Bend, they're mixing the yard debris and the food.
And we'll reload
and then
it
they
right
composting
the
it up there?
In the Dalles, yeah. Yep. That's the plan.
And so then what's going to happen to it after the Dalles
part? Whatever they do with the end product.
Who's they?
Dirt Huggers is the...
You're just trying to figure out ratios right now, or what?
No, cost and logistics. You know, what's it? You know, a lot of it's just cost, and can they handle it?
And they're not picky about the plastic forks.
Well, the plastic forks, everybody's picky about, but they can potentially handle some wax cardboard and or regular cardboard. And in our program, we're using, like, the little paper food baskets and that kind of stuff. Well, these digesters want juicy, sugary material that makes the best gas, and not cellulose.
It's just really hard from the user's standpoint. I know at Legacy, we used, I figure it's like 2.5 million cups of those coffee cups and juice cups and cups, and they use styrofoam. And we've been trying to get out of that. We had the Solo people come down from Tacoma and talk to us, and they said we just cannot eat the paper cups, won't work, and, you know, that are digestible. And, you know, certainly not from the economy standpoint. And they said the only way we're going to get out of it, we're going to have to use the plastic cups, but we can collect them again. And then they can be recycled as they're putting them into a white, heavy, styrofoam heavy. There's a machine that makes them into a regular plug of styrofoam. And they'll, for $250 a month, I think they'll give us the machine. We're talking Legacy-wide to you know, compress those things.
I don't think we're going to go for it. Have to see it work.
But that's the Solo Cup Company out of Tacoma.
But that's a general plan. I mean, you know.
So they take the compost and spread it in orchards out there or something, or?
Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's a dirt product after.
Who is?
A soil amendment product after that.
Whose product is it?
Dirt Huggers.
Dirt Huggers.
There are a couple guys that actually were out in situ in Bingen there. They're engineers, and they got involved in this. And apparently they've done a fairly good job in the Dalles, but they've run out of space. So they're moving across the Dalles Port, which all the way out to the east, and I don't know if you've ever been in there. You go to the east of Dalles Port, and there's nothing but scab land out there. And so that's about as nice a place as you can put a compost facility. And its wind generally blows to the west.
And actually, there's another component to compost, and especially compost that has organics and the food waste in it. And that is the state of Washington with their MPDES requirements that are coming down. They're requiring more low impact development projects, you know, like when things are built, and compost is a very important part of that to get some of these low impact development projects, you know, to work correctly. You have to use soil amendment, and organic compost is a very important part of that. So I think in the future, a couple of years in the future, there's going to be a demand for the product. And if somebody can figure out how to do it and get the ratios and stuff right, I think they're going to be successful, frankly.
Yeah, what scares me, though, is it going to be like the tire recyclers that end up leaving us with something that we don't necessarily want.
Yeah. Compost would be a little better than a tire.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, we've seen that with technology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Ty Ross.
Oh, I still got a recycled rubber tire roof. 750 of those buggers.
So, any other comments about the...
We're going to review this recommendations in the final form, right?
We'll see all of this again. You'll see the chapters, and you'll get to see the recommendations at the end of the chapter. But this particular chapter is basically just taking.
So the chit shrink of the
beast. One of the things I saw in there was under education, getting to a diverse population. Do we have anything in Spanish or Russian? Or
we have some. Mostly what we have are labels that go into the carts and things like that that are in different languages. But that is something that
I'm looking like brochures or something.
Yeah, that's something that we want to do. We don't really have...
Because you're getting more and more Spanish.
Yes, and that's why...
Only type people.
Yeah, and that's why it's a recommendation. But to answer your question, not really. We don't, but we need to.
Well, Matt's going to talk about some of the outreach stuff we're going to like here. We will actually do what they call an EJ study, which is the environmental justice study, to determine, you know, what's the demographics. Just to decide whether we need to do that or not. And in that case, you'd have some kind of little blurb on the bottom and shoot them to a website where they can go.
And actually in websites now, I mean, it's very easy to have a different web page and a different language.
Yeah.
Because you're not bearing much more cost, just the translation.
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes, you know, you may want to even have a public meeting with an interpreter there.
That's true.
Or sign language, too.
There's not that many. Compared to the Spanish, it's...
You need, right, but you got to... Like
difference.
He says, you got to go to the... Figure out what the population is.
Right.
To your point, Richard, I took school supplies over to Washington Elementary. It's sort of upper downtown Vancouver, just a little bit on the east side, 29th Street.
I know where it's
30.
At.
Okay. A few English-speaking students, but I came right about the time school was out. Hispanic families, almost universally Hispanic families, and it's a walking school. If you know the school, you probably know that. And that means that whole neighborhood in that area is predominantly Hispanic, or at least has a very high number. So in cases like that, that is a group that can benefit from having some kind of multilingual or bilingual information. And to your point about, what did you call it? The
environmental justice.
Environmental justice. Those are the kinds of things that are taken into consideration and should be.
Right.
Yeah. There are actually federal requirements, and we can get federal grant monies for road projects or whatever. Do you have to do it as part of the gig anymore?
Some of the neighborhood newsletters are delivered in multi-language in neighborhoods where there is a large group of specific minorities.
You might consider working with the schools in that area too, because if they send home a weekly blurb, you know, of what goes on in the community, and same with each of the sections of town has a little neighborhood area group. I know I'm in the fairgrounds group. And they put out a little blurb, too, that you get
association. Yeah, we actually kind of looked into that up there as far as the neighborhood associations. And so far, the only one we've identified is actually the homeowner, but associates that I've discussed. So we plan in that area to hit it pretty hard. they'll know about it.
And I'm sure Sarah's probably been out to the schools too, and you know, talked about, you know, recycling, because like you say, we do it at the schools really well.
Right.
So
right.
Why all you have to do is get the kids to tell right. Mom and Dad how to do it at home.
That's the idea. That's exactly the idea.
But it's nice if those kids that can understand both Spanish
oh,
and
yeah.
English,
mm-hmm. yeah,
if
yeah.
they could take something home in Spanish
yeah.
to give to their parents so their parents would understand.
Right.
Plus they'd feel more included.
They
maybe
do.
Waste Connections has that chart in Spanish.
They do, actually. I think they do. Waste Connections has actually done a better job than we have in terms of getting
well, some they've got it for so many of their other franchise areas. Yeah. English is the minority language.
Yeah. But in terms of the county and our information, we definitely want to have that as a priority. And
do you think you might put a time period on that one, too, and really look at it?
We'll have time periods on all of them.
Yeah. No, I just see more and more of it. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anita, mm-hmm. in two places, we talk about under page 18-12, landfill disposal, where we're talking about what our recommendations are for Chapter 10. No new MSW landfills due to the sole source aquifer.
Right.
When we go to page 18-18, I think it's part of organic waste. Item number 7, no new special waste landfills are to be located in the county due to sole source aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
Rely on recycling and out-of-county disposal.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a new recommendation that is effective. Did we make that this year, but it won't be implemented until 14?
Actually, the recommendation regarding no new special waste landfills to be located in the county rely upon recycling and out-of-county disposal. So that's prior language. So we have those recommendations in the current plan. And what's changed is the reference to the sole source aquifer.
Yeah, they added the red to say why
yeah.
you're not allowed.
I don't have the color.
Okay. So the current solid waste management plan that we have right now has all of the recommendations in it of no new landfills, the various landfills. I think there's the C&D and special waste
MSW.
And then the MSW. So what's been added is kind of the explanation of
Well, did we add it 5 years ago?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We did.
Okay. Which was, I think, after we heard the public hearing for
yes.
whatever that landfill's name is called today.
Right. That's
okay.
Correct.
Didn't it come, actually, with Gilbert's proposal way out on 192nd area?
Well, yeah, before that.
Yeah.
There's been more than one reason why it's a prudent.
We thought it was a very good idea to add it.
So then we get into enforcement.
Uh-huh.
It says county
where
number
you at?
Four. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, it's
1819.
So it's chapter 16 is enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
When we say enforcement, what an enforcement of what? Is it county law and WAC and RCW? Is that the kind of enforcement we're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Generally what he's talking about, the first one's talking about the UTC, and they actually provide a level of enforcing in their policies and procedures within the county. But mostly what we're talking about is the public health.
It doesn't mention working with the sheriff, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does.
So that was my final question here. Page 18-20, adopt an ordinance expanding enforcement provisions for unsecured loads of transported waste. The state law already exists on that, doesn't it? Didn't we?
But that's for state highways.
Ah, that's right. That
it doesn't.
And enforcement locally on county roads or
city roads
city.
Have to have their own.
Yeah. And that's actually current language, too. That's not new. So
is it?
It's already in there.
Which number are we looking at?
Eight.
It was
well, page 1820.
The sheriff can enforce that.
Yeah.
But I don't see
the Maria, whatever.
That
Maria law. Yeah.
Maria.
Well, they call it that. It was the young lady who got smashed in an uncovered load accident. And, but they can do it. We've done stings just on 503 and out on the, out on Lower River Road, which is actually a city road. And, but it's a more a matter of money.
Priority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always been, even where the sheriff could do it, it's limited budget in the sheriff's office. But it is, I know when we first talked about it, I was thinking, you know, how big of a problem can that be? But when you're out on the roads and you start paying attention to the number of people that have a truck piled up with junk and it's teetering off the edge and you realize that hits on the highway, people will get hurt trying to steer around it or run over it, wreck their car, get injured, and it's just an unnecessary risk.
Right. Okay. Any other comments?
Anything else on Chapter 18? Okay, is there any other business from staff or public?
January?
January 2nd is our next scheduled meeting. I would entertain a motion to cancel that meeting.
I'd like to, before we close, I'd like to thank Jean Stewart for her presence over the years and the probing questions that she would always ask. You're just great.
Love the details.
Appreciate it, and we'll miss you.
Thank you. I'll miss everybody here because you're conscientious and you do a good job, and it's nice to be associated with a group that does that. So thank you.
I'm going to close.
We've got January 2nd meeting. Do we want to have one? Day after New Year's, it's a 4-day weekend.
The second is fun. Oh,
how's it a 4-day weekend?
That's a Thursday.
That's a Thursday.
Yeah. It's not a weekend.
Early birds.
I know I'm here, so.
I'm here.
I'm not.
I will be, but I would.
Would rather not. So there's a tiebreaker right there.
Yeah, I'll be here.
You'll be here? Oh, staff here?
Jeannie's got a
problem. Probably.
I'm here.
Mike will be here.
I got to go to California for the Christmas, but I'll be back.
But doesn't staff, if there's a holiday on Wednesday, sometime take two vacation days so you can get
well, I was just actually thinking how it will come up really quick.
If
you factor in Christmas and New Year's,
they'll probably take Monday and Tuesday off. Probably Monday and Tuesday would be the days.
Yeah.
Who knows? It may take all week.
There's going to be a lot of people gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're usually.
What do we have to address as far as the plan?
Well, actually, you know, we're doing pretty good because we have the new chapter, which probably would not be ready by January, but would probably be ready by February. And then I need to look at the appendix because we're running through the appendix and I need to see what's kind of queued up. Off the top of my head,
why don't we look and see what we would be looking at?
Okay, could you give us a report? If we don't have enough,
if we don't have a lot, then
all right.
Yeah, because part of it is, and I think that we've all kept costs in mind. If we don't have enough to justify the expense of having staff, cancel it and pick it up in February and go
okay.
on. But I guess let us know in an email what our agenda could be.
Okay.
Another factor, Anita, is the council so far has not talked about who might be appointed.
Yeah.
Or if the city is even going to maintain a spot.
Okay.
Because my reappointment as a council member, it's a brand new reappointment.
Yes.
So the city will probably not talk about committee assignments until maybe February.
Okay.
So Rich is always here. So, yes. I mean, the city definitely has somebody to watch out for the interest, but... Just a FYI.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
I'll look at that and
let
everybody know.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Jerry. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. No, I can get my finish. I think you and I will cross paths in the future.
You know where we're at.
I do know where you're at.
Thank you.
Good job.
We'll see if we're going to see you.
Yeah.
I had all the walkers go up and look at the art. Yeah,